We've had this idea for a while and we've been taking it around, but we've had a lot of kind of pushback because the lead characters are deaf, and there's been a question as to whether hearing audiences will engage with that. The fact that we've gotten to Sundance is amazing, and it's really kind of validated the project. So now we're trying to get some funding for the feature film, which is going to have an entirely deaf cast. It's all going to be in sign language. But our screenings have gone really well and there's been a real great engagement. So hopefully this will kickstart the feature.
Rob Savage, the writer and director of the apocalyptic satire Dawn of the Deaf, part of the Shorts lineup at this year's Sundance Film Festival. More from Park City, Utah, coming up today on The Cinema Show. Oh, and if you thought this event was all about movies, well, not quite.
Swanky clothes, boots, belts, jewelry, and cameras. How about some meal tickets to the very best restaurants?
We'll look at the rush of brands looking to steal some of the spotlight as the crowds gather around this time of year, and a little later.
Everybody hated me. They thought I was a loser. How come I was 30 and still not married? Rhoda, wasn't she Jewish? And what about this newscaster? Newscasters can't be stupid.
A tribute to Oscar nominee and television pioneer Mary Tyler Moore. That's all coming up on The Cinema Show here on Monocle 24. Park City in Utah is currently swarming with some of the world's most ambitious filmmakers as the Sundance Film Festival gets underway. Monocle contributor Dan Illick is there. Dan, mega distribution deals and standout films, no doubt. Where should we begin?
Well, I think probably the best place to begin is probably the most buzzy film of the festival. The one that everyone is saying that could really take over the 2018 Oscar race. And they're talking about a film called Mudbound. Mudbound is a story that is all about racism and post-traumatic stress disorder in a post-World War II Mississippi. Dee Reese directed this one. And this is a really exciting film for her because it's a follow-up to her breakthrough indie hit Pariah. It's really taken the whole festival by storm. A lot of people have said that this is going to be the breakout film of the festival. I know when she premiered it at the Eccles Theatre on the weekend that she had over 2 standing ovations. Somebody said 3 standing ovations to me and I didn't believe them, but it's been widely reported that she's had 2 standing ovations after the film was aired. So that was pretty remarkable. So that film in particular, Mudbound, is just taken over the festival. Everyone's just talking about it in the streets.
I assume by 2 standing ovations, you don't actually mean just 2 people standing up and clapping.
No. See, the wonderful thing about going to a film festival is that you get to show the filmmaker just how much you appreciate the film at the end of the film. So, you know, the credits rolled and then people stood up. And then when it came time for the Q&A, people stood up. And so it's one of those amazing things to be in a room like that when that happens. That's pretty special. I saw a few standing ovations of my own. I was in a film called Nobody Speak, the Hulk Hogan, Gawker and Trials of the Free Press story. That's by documentary maker Brian Knappenberger. You may remember a film from him a few years back called The Internet's Own Boy. There was a great documentary about a young man named Aaron who was fighting the federal government on internet and copyright laws. This one, however, is not so much about the Hulk Hogan sex tape and Gawker court case preceding it, so much as about how the erosion of speech in America will lead to the downfall of democracy. It's quite a pessimistic film. It ties all these elements together, like Donald Trump becoming president, Peter Thiel using his enormous billionaire powers to destroy Gawker, and how the erosion of the Fourth Estate could see the end of democracy in America.
Trump has done a number of things over the course of his campaign that should give us a great deal of cause for concern. Among them are his lack of transparency, his inaccessibility, his extremely harsh criticism and even abuse of journalists.
When I raise money for veterans, excuse me, I've watched you on television. You're a real beauty.
Immigrants on the whole
Come on, try getting it out.
I'll get it out.
I mean, I don't know if you're going to put this on television, but you don't even know what you're talking about.
He's really been vociferous in his criticism of the press.
Is this what it's going to be like covering you if you're president?
Yeah, it is.
We're going to have this kind of confrontation in the press room?
Okay, yeah, it is going to be like this, David.
In general, he's called the media and reporters scum. He has said over and over and over again that they're dishonest, that they're corrupt.
They don't want to give it straight because the press are liars. They're terrible people.
These are the most dishonest human beings.
When a lot of people who go to Sundance, there are a lot of film fans and media fans and journalists. When a film like that airs or screens, that's definitely standing ovation material for Sundance. That's catnip for Sundance audiences.
Absolutely. No surprises there at all. It's interesting. I've just been looking at some of the titles that have been creating a lot of buzz and attracting a lot of attention. They seem to be quite topical, politically speaking, even though, Donald Trump has only just become president. But there's already a documentary playing at Sundance about his rise to the presidency, which I understand was made in absolute record time. And yet people are still talking about it and saying that it is definitely worth watching. How are you viewing some of the titles that people are talking about over there? Do they seem to be reflecting the current political climate, despite the fact that really, there hasn't been that much time?
Oh, certainly. Sundance is filled with films that are well and truly inside the zeitgeist. The film you're talking about is Trumped. And Trumped, what I understand, it's a good film, but it's nothing we already don't know. but it's kind of, a lot of films like that have existed. Like the one I was talking about before, Nobody Speak, Brian Knappenberger included footage from the Women's March and the inauguration, which just happened the week before. And I was at the inauguration and the Women's March. And I was like, oh, my goodness. At that moment, when that footage came up, I thought, oh, my goodness, this is like reality and filmmaking blurring at the same time. So that's truly interesting to see how he's managed to finish his film right up until screening time. So that was very interesting. So there are plenty of other films as well that have captured the zeitgeist. I saw quite a few of them. There was one called The Workers' Cup, which is about the workers who were building the Qatari stadiums for the World Cup in 2018. And this is about them putting on their own World Cup amongst the workers in the workers' camps. That was really a beautiful yarn. There was a story called Plastic China. That was by filmmaker Juliang Wang about a family of Chinese plastic recyclers. And it was such a wonderful personal story. It kind of gave a nod to the grander narrative of the rise of China and China's middle class. It was quite fascinating to see it through this family's eyes. And then another film that I saw yesterday called The New Radical. This is about freedom of speech and how the government is suppressing freedom of speech in different ways. It's about a guy called Corey Wilson who's made the very first 3D printed gun. And while it is illegal to have such gun, it's not illegal to have the files to be able to make the gun. But this free speech story really pointed out the fact that under this administration and the administration before, that the anxiety around free speech and the kinds of free speech that are available in the United States. Well, let's just put it this way. Some speech is more equal than others, is more free than others. So it's pretty interesting to see how these narratives of the current zeitgeist are woven within the films at Sundance this year. That's for sure.
Dan, even though the Oscar nominations only came out fairly recently for this year, the Oscar campaign for the next year really begins at Sundance in many ways, doesn't it? I can remember that people were talking about Oscars for Manchester by the Sea. And that, of course, has only just been nominated just now, even though it was playing at Sundance last year. Do you feel as though there is actually some form of early buzz around some of the titles that you've been seeing?
Without a doubt. The thing is, the Oscar race now is so fervent. There's two different kind of strategies. If you are a small indie film, Sundance is where you want to go to sell your film, to get buzz, so that when the distribution window pops up later in the year, you will be able to make noise in a market that is very crowded. So that's what Sundance is great for. It's great for small films to kind of break out above the big blockbusters. Certainly Mudbound, the film I spoke at the beginning of our chat, is definitely one of those films. People are already talking about that film as a Oscar contender. And because it is an independent film, it is with a newish director, and it's got a small but very prominent cast. That film needs to kind of get buzz now to kind of sit above the rest of the films for the year. So when that film does get released to public release later in the year, it can sit above and use that Sundance cred to stand above the film. So that's the strategy. If you're a smaller film, Sundance is where you want to be to rise above the studio films.
Dan Illick at Sundance, thank you very much for joining us on The Cinema Show. The Sundance Film Festival is naturally all about movies, but the festival wouldn't have its worldly reputation if it weren't for its ability to attract internationally renowned names. A key part of that attraction are the brands all vying to play a part in the event, a game of gift-bearing that can sometimes reach eye-watering levels of luxury goods changing hands. Monocle contributor James Nelson wrangled his way into one of the exclusive gift suites to find out what's filling up the swag bags around this time of year.
Swanky clothes, boots, belts, jewelry, and cameras. How about some meal tickets to the very best restaurants? Exotic trips, and yes, oh yes, high-end sunglasses. It's all here along Main Street in Park City, Utah. And much more as Sundance courts the star crowd.
My name's Carly Robin Green, and I live in Los Angeles, California.
You know, Sundance is an incredible thing. I've covered it for about 16, 18 years. Part of it is the gifting, the gift suites.
Yes.
And it's always going to be there. It's kind of the background, the fun, the energy. Tell me about how you view that and maybe what you've received.
Well, you know, part of the fun of Sundance, of course, is the exposure to new products, new brands. I've received some amazing leather coats from Members Only at the Music Lodge, for example. The Ecolux Lounge is amazing. I've gotten some fabulous moose knuckles, winter coats, some fabulous boots as well. And Carrie Feinstein has done some great suites, but I'm really excited for the Indie Lounge gifting suite this year. They did suitcases last year, which is so great because traveling back and forth, especially in the music business, I'm always on the road and doing different gigs, so I need the suitcases. So I've really acquired some really nice things, and also the jewelry presence up here has a real Western flair to it, which I love here in Utah. So it's been really wonderful as far as exposure to new products.
When the movie stars step away from the theaters, often they are slipped into the shops and tents along Main Street for a bit of shopping, a free gift-giving extravaganza. Part of the gifting, of course, is the gift of good food, and we've got a guy here that knows a lot about that. Welcome to Sundance.
Thank you. Yes, happy to be here. I'm Richard Blaze. So I'm a chef, but I was also just in a film. So I guess I'm kind of like in this. I'm in the industry.
You're now. In there.
I'm in the industry. But yeah, one of the best gifts, of course, is food. I'm at the Chase Sapphire House on Main. Last night we did the cast party for the Big Sick movie.
Wow.
So we're providing some of the hors d'oeuvres later in the day here at the Chase Sapphire House. I'm doing a live show, cooking only local ingredients from the Wasatch Mountains. So yeah, food is a big part of it. And I think this is, you know, definitely one of, if not the best house here on Main Street.
You know, how do you decide what to cook, what to serve? So much out there, Richard, and with your background, success shows about cooking, how do you pick what Sundance folks are gonna like?
Yeah, well, I mean, here's the thing. You know, I think as a artist, at one point you cook for yourself, and then I realized that's a horrible idea, that really as an artist you should want to make people happy. So last night the menu was lobster rolls and fried rice balls and meatballs and things that I know people who come to parties want to eat as they're drinking and having a good time. It's not about me, it's about them. Now today's a little different because I'm doing a demonstration where I'm sort of be, you know, playing this fantastical chef who's out in the woods. So this is going to be straight Richard Blaze, liquid nitrogen. We're making our own snow. We're cooking with robots. So, you know, it depends on what you're doing and what venue. So it just depends who you're cooking for.
I got to ask you, you know, they fill up those swag bags. Have you ever been offered, Richard, come and cook at our place in our city, and they want to take you home, so to speak, metaphorically in a swag bag, Richard?
Right. Oh, wow. You know, not like... Be honest. Maybe in an abstract way. Yeah, I mean, it happens, perhaps. But yeah, I mean, to be a part of that gifting process is pretty amazing. I've never thought of myself or my food as a gift, so thank you for giving me that gift.
Well, you know what? Don't forget me. I may get a recipe sent in the mail, an email.
A recipe?
With a good
recipe. Once we're done here, I'm going to feed you.
The core of independent filmmaking and the mission of the Sundance Film Festival has nothing at all to do with swag, but movies. Movie stars and glamour are always going to attract the gift givers. And so, like the tail on a happy dog, the swag wags on. For Monocle 24, I'm James Nelson in Park City, Utah.
Thank you, James. In a moment, we'll hear from the man behind one of the shorts playing at this year's Sundance that sees Earth's population reduced to a small group of deaf people. This is The Cinema Show. Stay tuned. Some of the other notable moments at this year's Sundance Film Festival are the distribution deals in motion. That is, of course, what it's all about. And if we needed any more proof that streaming services are capable of outranking their more established industry peers, well, Amazon and Netflix were happy to oblige. Amazon secured the US rights to Landline, a family drama set in the 1990s, starring Edie Falco. The deal follows the service making history this week after becoming the first streaming service to secure an Oscar nomination for Best Picture with Manchester by the Sea, which the company picked up at last year's festival. Meanwhile, Netflix has shaken hands on one of the most lucrative deals for a documentary feature Sundance has ever seen. Icarus unwraps the Russian doping scandal by following its director, Brian Fogel, as he dopes himself with the help of a shady Russian scientist. Rival distributors were vying for the film almost as soon as it premiered before Netflix agreed to the $5 million deal. But it wasn't all gold and silver for the streaming giant. They lost out on the North American rights to Ingrid Goes West, which will be distributed by Neon instead. The digital age satire follows a rather impressionable young woman on her quest to Los Angeles in search of a social media star with an apparently perfect life. And if all of this talk of independent film has whet your appetite, well, head on over to Mubi, the curated movie site of cult, classic, and award-winning cinema. Among the titles you can find playing in the UK right now are Capturing the Freedmans, the incredible documentary following a seemingly ordinary family until everything takes an unexpected turn. And in the US, there's a miniature French film festival underway right now with 2015's A Decent Man, Parisienne, and the tense family thriller Prejudice. Sample a month of movies for free over at mubi.com/monocle. That is MUBI/monocle. This is The Cinema Show on Monocle 24. I'm Ben Rylan. Rob Savage has become quite a regular presence at film festivals all around the globe, with stints in Rome, Berlin, and at Raindance here in London. His latest project is the short satire Dawn of the Deaf, which sees a small group of deaf people struggling to survive after a strange sound infects the hearing population. James Nelson sat down with Rob for a chat.
Here at Sundance 2017, and I found an interesting filmmaker. Introduce yourself, young man, about why you're at Sundance 2017.
So I'm Rob Savage, and I'm the writer-director of Dawn of the Deaf, which is showing in Shorts Programme 3 at Sundance. Dawn of the Deaf is a little horror short we made with the deaf community in London. It's been going great so far.
The concept is fascinating. Of course, I'm going to take a look at this short, but give us a thumbnail of what it's about and how you came up with that, Rob.
Sure. So Dawn the Deaf is a zombie movie about the deaf community. It's about an infection that spread through sound. A strange, possibly alien pulse is heard all around London and infects the hearing. So our only survivors is a collection of deaf characters who have to kind of figure out this new and dangerous world.
And tell me about coming to Sundance with this film. First of all, I guess when you were selected or picked, it's not easy to get in this place. You know that.
Yeah. Well, we thought, because our film has been playing around for almost a year now. We finished it a while ago. So we weren't expecting this at all. We thought we were coming to the end of our run. We were going to put it online. And then we heard from Sundance that we were in. We're the only kind of live-action fiction film from the entire UK that managed to get in. But at the same time, the day that we found out about Sundance, we got turned down from the tiniest little festival in the UK. So I guess it's all very subjective.
It all comes out certainly in the wash. So how about the experience thus far? You know, Sundance, Robert Redford designed this a long time ago for the independent, for those that otherwise wouldn't be able to show their works. You seem to be smiling, so I guess that's part of why you're enjoying it.
It's been great. I've packed more into the 3 days that I've been here than I have in the past 3 months. Been taking meetings, been going to events and meeting other filmmakers. The whole city is taken over by people who love film. I've been having the most amazing conversations on the shuttle buses between venues or people I bump into on the street.
What might be on the horizon next? Anything that sort of has come to your mind now that you've been at Sundance and talked to so many others?
Mm-hmm. Well, the main reason we're at Sundance is to try and promote the short film as a proof of concept for the feature. We've had this idea for a while and we've been taking it around, but we've had a lot of kind of pushback because the lead characters are deaf and there's been a question as to whether hearing audiences will engage with that. The fact that we've gotten to Sundance is amazing and it's really kind of validated the project. So now we're trying to get some funding for the feature film, which is going to have an entirely deaf cast. It's all going to be in sign language. But our screenings have gone really well and there's been a real great engagement. So hopefully this will kickstart the feature.
The fact that, you know, it has the element of deafness, why is that important, whether it's what some people would call being marginalized, not mainstream, or whatever the affliction or handicap, whatever you want to describe it as, why is that a piece in your film?
Well, it's twofold. The film is a horror, and horror is all about perspective. If you can lock into somebody's perspective and make the audience walk around in their shoes, that's what's at the root of horror. It's when do you let the audience know that the killer is in the house, or do you find out as the character is? And having characters whose perspective is limited somewhat by their lack of hearing is a great opportunity to put a hearing audience into that position and make them experience that. But it's also a great way to learn about deaf culture in a way that's fun and a way that's engaging and a way that doesn't feel like being lectured. And I've certainly found out I've discovered a lot about the deaf community just through working with them on this project. So hopefully it will bridge that divide in a way that's fun and engaging and scary.
Well, congratulations on your work and getting into Sundance. And pun intended, I hope that a lot of people hear about your film and enjoy it as well, Rob Savage.
Thanks very much.
Filmmaker Rob Savage speaking to James Nelson at Sundance. And finally today, a tribute to one of the screen's most inspiring stars, Mary Tyler Moore, who passed away this week at the age of 80.
Excuse me, sir, I'm supposed to see I beg your pardon. I wonder if you could tell me... excuse me.
Hello, hello.
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 I'm supposed to see a Mr. Grant about a secretarial job.
It's been filled.
If this young lady came to see Mr. Grant, why don't you let Mr. Grant handle it? Right this way, miss.
It's been filled.
Do you have any idea when Mr. Grant will be back?
Hi, Mr. Grant.
You're back.
To anyone watching American television throughout the late 60s and early 70s, Mary Tyler Moore will be remembered as one of the first to demonstrate that women could succeed in a male-dominated workplace on their own merits. She rose to prominence on The Dick Van Dyke Show in the 1960s, but it was her role as the single, never-married television news producer in the self-titled series The Mary Tyler Moore Show that endeared her to a generation.
Really? Yes, just fine. Fine. Look, a couple of small points. I mean, hardly worth mentioning, but Do you think it's right on the election show to do impressions of Humphrey Bogart?
That's all you know. I was doing Jimmy Cagney. I'm not going back out there alone.
Unmarried, female, confident, unfussed about men, and focused on her career. It's an all too rare character description, even on today's screens. In the early 1970s, it was unheard of. Mary Tyler Moore was, quite literally, the first woman to break the sitcom mum mold. While Barbara Walters was convincing people that a woman could, in fact, read the news, and a young Oprah Winfrey was just starting out, Mary's cool defiance paved the way for series like Sex and the City, Will and Grace, Broad City, The Good Wife, and even Supergirl. Not to mention some pop culture references, too.
I'm the Mary and you're the Rhoda.
That's ridiculous! You're the Rhoda, you're the Jewish one!
Oh my God, I'm talking cuteness-wise, Romy, okay? And cuteness-wise, I'm the Mary.
But after the series ended in 1977, Mary Tyler Moore felt she had to take a conspicuous step away from the sweet optimist of her TV self. The perfect challenge arrived when Robert Redford cast her in his directorial debut, Ordinary People.
It's really important to try to hurt me, isn't it?
Don't you have that backwards?
Oh, and how do I hurt you? By embarrassing you in front of a friend? Poor Beth, she has no idea what her son is up to. He lies and she believes every word of it.
I didn't lie.
You did. You lied every time you came into this house at 6:30. If it's starting all over again, the lying, the covering up, the disappearing for hours, I will not stand for it. I can't stand it. I really can't.
Well, don't then. Go to your...
The deeply emotional film tells the story of a family suffering under a cloud of mourning following the death of their eldest child. Her performance as the distant and bitter mother shocked many who had adored her on television, and that also scored her an Oscar nomination.
And the winner is... This is the time I'm right. Ordinary People.
But it was her work on television that made her a legend, and in 2002, the city of Minneapolis unveiled a statue of Mary throwing her hat up into the air. A sight familiar to a generation of aspirational young people hoping that they too might make it after all.
You might just make it after all.
And that's it for today's program. We will leave you now with the very familiar sound of the legendary opening sequence to The Mary Tyler Moore Show, Love Is All Around, which was written and performed by Sonny Curtis. And it was also chosen in 1999 by Entertainment Weekly magazine as the second greatest television moment in American history. My name's Ben Ryland. Thank you for listening. Today's program was edited by Kieran Matthew Banerjee and researched by Yolene Goffan. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your audio, and The Cinema Show is back next week. Thanks for listening.
Alone, but it's time you started living. It's time you let someone else do some giving. Love is all